Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together to address problems instead of defending positions. Well, you know, as a professional comedian, it's my job to pump ironies. So here's an irony supplement to munch on. Americans spent $3.65 trillion on healthcare in 2018. Now, that amount is larger than the GDPs of such countries as Brazil, the UK, Mexico, Spain, and Canada. And yet, we rank 27th in the world in health. In a study of 11 countries, the U.S. ranked last for health outcomes, equity, and quality, despite having the highest per capita health earnings. The U.S. also had the highest rate of mortality amenable to health care, meaning more Americans die from poor care quality than any other country involved in the study. And, hard to believe, it gets worse. Not only is our health care outcome not commensurate with health industry income, but the fundamental inequity and iniquity of the current system has created another life-threatening disease in the body politic. $1 trillion in unpayable medical debt in America. Medical debt causes hardships for individuals and families, communities, and in fact, the nation as a whole. Well, our guest this week, Jerry Ashton, along with his End Medical Debt co-authors, Robert Goff and Craig Antico, created a charity called RIP Medical Debt, the charity that was made famous by John Oliver on HBO for abolishing, at that point, $15 million in medical debt. Since 2014, RIP has purchased and forgiven more than $750 million in medical debt, and they recently reached the milestone of $1 billion, abolishing $1 billion in medical debt. Jerry Ashton, our guest today, has more than 40 years' experience in the credit and collections industry. In 1995, to uplift the way debtors are treated, he formed CFO Advisors in New York. We can talk a little bit about that. His team serviced $500 million in receivables for Fortune 500 companies. He was inspired by Wall Street's Occupy Wall Street's debt forgiveness campaign. And he joined with Craig Antico to found RIP Medical Debt. Jerry serves as RIP's Director of Education and Outreach. Welcome, Jerry.
I'm very pleased to be on your show. Thank you.
Okay. Now, I have a cartoon in my head. In the cartoon, there's an individual is expressing gratitude or maybe mixed emotions after a successful medical procedure. As he addresses the hospital and surgical team, he is saying, "I shall be forever indebted to you." Okay, so that may be more true than not these days. And that brings us to the topic for today, medical debt. So, Jerry, could you give us an outline of the scope of this problem and then tell us what it was that sparked your own interest and involvement in the issue?
Okay, it's not like anybody's surprised, thanks to the headlines that are constantly appearing about people going to a hospital, walking out, if they're able to walk out, only to fall into the worst financial malady, and that is debt. People in America, we're one of the, the only so-called industrial or civilized top-tier nation that doesn't have health care for all their population. We have the unfortunate, or fortunate, depending on your political persuasion, the misfortune of being born in a country that will allow its citizens to go bankrupt just because they got sick or because they got injured. 60% of all bankruptcies in America are medical debt related. Something like 15 million Americans this past year through 2019 will have exhausted their entire life savings to meet medical bills. 50% of all women right now who are suffering from breast cancer are in collections. So when you take a look at those kind of statistics, and that's just a sampling, it makes you wonder, how in the world did we get here? So as a former bill collector, my job used to be calling people to ask them and persuade them to pay the doctor or the hospital. Now I've reverse engineered myself, and I'm contacting people to let them know that their debt has been forgiven by our charity called RIP Medical Debt. So I'm wandering a little bit there, but does that give you kind of a feel?
Well, yeah, and thank you for those statistics. You know, I mean, we all know that there's a problem, and yet this issue has been normalized. You know, we somehow think that this is a normal situation. I just watched a video of people in the UK being told about the cost of American medical procedures, and they're just so incredulous that that could be the case. But in this country, somehow we've learned to accept that condition. So before we go deeper into, what really created that problem in our healthcare system, was there anything in particular that flipped your switch to put you on this different path?
Well, before we leave foreign countries like Britain, where their jaws did drop when they heard about medical costs, my co-founder Craig and Antico and I were interviewed today by a German news group, television group, that were aghast, not about just the cost, those were insane enough, but the very fact that people were being held responsible and financially accountable for paying those bills that no human being has enough resources to be able to pay. They could not believe that we would allow people to fall into a financial hole that they will never climb out of. I told them, I said, you in Germany are a bit fortunate, to say the least. You don't have that problem like we do. And in America, we'll say, well, the reason they don't is because they're taxed to death. And I asked them exactly what their tax rate was, and it was about 45%. Mm-hmm. Before you get too excited about that, that 45% makes it possible for them to go to sleep at night not worrying about medical debt. It also enables them to have free education. So when we think that if we're paying about more like 30% or 35%, and I wonder about that, and yet if you added all the costs of the deductibles, all the costs of the co-pays, all the costs of the insurance torn fabric that allows us to fall through, you mix that in, and I know darn well we're doing much worse than any so-called socialist country.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, you know, there is so much. The mainstream media seems to not really want to have this conversation. Now, of course, I saw you were interviewed on NPR recently. Was that just the other day, or yesterday, or 2 days ago?
Yes, well, about 2 days ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that finally this is coming up. For yourself, this amazing RIP medical debt, how did that happen? How did that get organized, and how did you and your partner, Mr. Antico, Craig Antico. How did you two get together, and how did this project get launched?
Well, we can thank Occupy Wall Street for this. I'm a former, in a past life, I was in the Navy, and I was a Navy journalist, photojournalist. So when I learned about Occupy Wall Street, I'm only two or three subway stops from Zuccotti Park. I live here in Manhattan. I decided to go check it out, and the complaints resonated with me. They got bailed out. We got sold out, 1% and 99%. And the purpose of Occupy was to bring to everybody's attention these financial inequities. So when I'm in the milieu and I'm listening to these people and I'm watching what they do, and they're all good people, and they're coming from love and strength, and they're making sure that people are aware that something is seriously amiss, well, they change the conversation for America, and they also change the conversation in my mind. It wasn't that I was pro healthcare, shall we say, pro people going into debt because of healthcare. I wasn't really aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of people are aware of it, of the debt we've come to. So that got me very interested in making a difference. So that's when I dragged my good partner, Craig Antico, down to Occupy, and I said, listen to these people. What can we do with our talents and skills? And since both of us were in the collections industry, it was pretty obvious that we needed to grow where we were planted. And we basically took the ideas and thoughts of Occupy and turned it into a viable 501c3 charity called RIP Medical Debt.
And where does the money come from to feed RIP?
All those lovely listeners that you have? They can be sure that I'm going to be reaching out to them, and I think I'll give them pretty good reason to want to donate to us, because that's where the money comes from. If it weren't for donations, we wouldn't be able to keep the lights on and the doors open. If it weren't for donations, we wouldn't be able to have gone from raising, I think it was $8,000 our first year, to enough money over the past 5 years to abolish $1 billion of the medical debt. And the reason that we're able to do a fantastic number like that is because when we go to the debt market, and I can explain that down the road, when we go to the debt market where they're selling medical debt, we buy it for a penny on the dollar, which means a $10 donation is $1,000. A $10,000 donation is $1 million in medical debt relief.
Wow. This is kind of like the bargain deal. After every collection option has been essentially futile, this goes into this huge pool. And at that point, you're able to have tremendous leverage, or as we would call it, leverage, to relieve these people of their debt. And at the same time, essentially clean the debt from the books. And that's really quite remarkable how you've been able to do that. Say a little bit more about how this, what the various stages of debt are, and maybe a little bit about your job as a collection agency. Where did you fit in your prior work prior to Occupy?
Well, I like to call this the chain of pain, because it begins once again, you make the mistake of being born in America. Number two, you make the mistake of getting sick or hurt. Number three, you make the mistake of ending up in a hospital. And then for those who are less fortunate, less equipped financially and however to survive this, you end up in a collection system that it grinds exceedingly long and very, very tenacious. So what happens is that when you do go to the hospital, and hopefully you come out fine, the bills start arriving, and you don't pay them. Now, why don't you pay them? Because you don't have the money. Americans are not deadbeats. Nobody says, I think I'll have some cancer today so I can beat a hospital out of $3 million. They don't do that. None of us do that. They don't say, I think I'm going to have heart attack symptoms so I can go to an emergency ward to find out it's just gas pains and then be charged $5,000. People don't, they are in the middle of a freeway and they are being run over by the system. So here you are, you're in the hospital, it gets fixed, you get out, bills arrive, you don't pay. Well, then the hospital goes to collection agencies. That's the world that I grew up in. They're called contingency, meaning that they work accounts contingent on a commission. And that usually runs between 15 and 25%. And that means if I'm a collection agency and those accounts are assigned to me, I begin to go to work looking for the money. And agencies statistically will do no better than collecting maybe, if they're fortunate, 1 out of 5 accounts. And that means 4 out of 5 accounts are not responding. Why is that? Because they can't afford it. They don't have the money. Well, the collection agency will return that account back to the hospital, which then looks at it and says, well, time to go to phase two. And in comes another collection agency, higher rate, more tenacious. When they fail, then it goes to attorneys. And when they fail, that money that's sitting there, the residue of people who are not responding, can then be put up for sale on the open debt market, much like a mortgage loan.
Huh.
Are you with me so far?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is a very good education on how that system works, by the way. Oh, and we're going to take a break right now, but we'll be back with Jerry Ashton. We're talking more about medical debt and the near-debt experience that many people have after coming out of the hospital. Steve Behrman, I'll be back after these messages.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help my son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Okay, we're back with our guest, Jerry Ashton, talking about RIP medical debt and his book, End Medical Debt. It's been very educational so far, Jerry. We found out a little bit about how this debt gets collected, and I want to use a little bit of another medical analogy that, in a certain regard, what you've come up with via your exposure to Occupy and so on is, I would consider it a financial ER, that in terms of the emergency that gets created when people are afflicted by this debt, to be able to buy that debt so cheaply and retire that debt is quite a blessing. At the same time, there is still the issue of the system itself that continues to produce this debt, that continues to be the most expensive healthcare system and really provide less than stellar results. So how do we address those kinds of long-term issues expressed in the stats that we both mentioned earlier in this broadcast?
Well, let's complete the cycle first so
okay.
We can talk about, really see the problem. And yes, there are solutions. So let's complete the idea that once your debt has been failed to be recovered,
mm-hmm.
The hospital is at a debt end.
Uh-huh. We're on the same track. We're in the same lap track. That's good.
I couldn't let that go.
Oh, good.
So
well, I'm glad you didn't.
Then the debt buyers, the people that are funded by Wall Street, will come to a hospital, and about one-third of all hospitals will sell that debt, which means that two-thirds don't, whether it be for ethical reasons, the charter doesn't require it, maybe it's humanitarian to not want to inflict further pain on people. But at any rate, one-third of all hospitals do sell it, and when they sell it, it's because they are being financially responsible. After all, the hospital has its bills to pay, and it needs to have access to capital to do that. And a debt buyer will walk into a hospital and say, I notice that you have $100 million sitting on that shelf over there. Doesn't seem to be doing you much good. I have a few million dollars in my my pocket here. Perhaps we could trade out. And that's what happens. $100 million can be purchased for 1 or 2 or 3 cents on the dollar. The reason it's even being purchased at such a small amount for the debt buyer is because the debt buyer feels and knows statistically that he'll be able to grind out at least 3 times his investment over a period of time, make a profit, pay back Wall Street, pay the help, and put some money in their pockets. So they proceed to buy that debt. And when they buy the debt and when they start pursuing it, it is for 100 pennies on the dollar.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that 100 cents on the dollar, and then you start adding penalties, interest. They put a mark on your credit report, all this to motivate you to pay an account that could be 1, 2, or 3 years old. So they will work it for a period of time, and they will be successful enough to get maybe 10% of what they bought back, which is a decent profit process. But that means 9 people out of 10 have this debt sitting in the coffers of a debt buyer. They will have it on their minds, and they will have a credit mark on their credit report.
Mm-hmm.
It's obscene. So when Craig and I, with our background and understanding, we said, well, we're a charity. We can't just forgive anybody's debt because it has to be a charitable act. So we created a criteria, not dissimilar to hospitals, in which we would identify people as falling into a charitable class. For example, number one, they might be 2 times the poverty level or below,
mm-hmm.
or they could be insolvent, or they could be in hardship, which we define as paying 5% of your annual income out of pocket for medical expenses. So with these three criteria, we go to the debt market. And with our partner TransUnion, we have all the data attributes that we need to go into a debt portfolio of billions of dollars and sweep through there to locate only those accounts that qualify on our basis.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do, we tell the debt seller, look, either sell it for less than a penny on a dollar or donate it to us because you'll never see your money. Listen, how about doing something good? And that's what they do. They will sell us the accounts that they ordinarily would just keep up on the shelf, hoping that someone would hit the lotto someday. But instead with us, they say, okay, we'll sell it to you. Now, where are we today? How do you see that now that you understand it?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And again, it's kind of like, first of all, you're not forgiving all debt. You're really looking at those cases where these people are, you know, really, really afflicted, and you're giving an opportunity for that debt to be relieved, and then you're also giving the holders of that debt an opportunity to forgive it themselves.
Well, they're not in a position to forgive a debt. The IRS is a rather strange animal. If you were to forgive a debt, guess what? That creates a 1099-C, which is, it shows that you've received income. After all, that debt was forgiven. It's still owed as far as the IRS is concerned. Only a 501c3 can forgive a debt with no tax consequences.
Ah, there you go. Excellent. That's a good distinction. So that's how you're able to do it.
Right.
I'm imagining that you got some play, via John Oliver, that really created some buzz for your work.
Well, we call him Saint Oliver. we're literally going to build a statue to this guy someday because he brought our attention to our charity, which was struggling at the time. When he put a show on, and by the way, if you go to YouTube, John Oliver Debt Forgiveness, there's almost 15 million impressions. That's how many people have watched it.
Wow.
And money started coming over the transom. Partnership showed up. We had four universities show up that are now in the process of doing an economic analysis of what it means to take medical debt off of people's backs. So we're going to have a study that will provide proof that indeed medical debt is a social determinant of poverty. It's a social determinant of more illness. So that report should be out sometime this year. It's going to be by UC Berkeley, UCLA, MIT, and the University of Chicago Economic Departments.
Wow. You know, it reminds me of something from my childhood. I used to love Mad Magazine, and one of the illustrators for Mad Magazine, Kelly Frias, who did the original Alfred E. Newman and so on. One of my favorite little mock ads that they did, Park Davis, one of the drug companies, used to have this great moments in medicine. And this was 50 years ago. And Kelly Frias' drawing was Great Moments in Medicine presenting the bill. And you see this guy in a hospital bed having an apoplectic stroke or something as he's looking at the bill. So, you know, that's going back to, you know, more than 50 years ago. So this is nothing new. This has been a system that we've had for a long time. It's only gotten more rapacious. So exactly.
Back in the day when your dad and my dad and even me and you perhaps, we would have a regular job. The job would have insurance for us, and it was livable. You could afford it. Health insurance annually now has become less affordable. And since 2015, when the Affordable Care Act went into effect, some 43 million Americans owe about $75 billion past due medical debt accounts on their current reports, and the majority of these people have insurance.
Mm.
It's unbelievable.
Isn't that? Yeah, that is unbelievable.
So in our book, End Medical Debt, which addresses about $1 trillion that's out there plaguing Americans right now, we make it very, very clear that this healthcare system is derailed. It's broken. When you realize that you're spending $9,000 or $12,000 a year on what is considered to be your deductible. I mean, it's not like we're driving a car where the purpose of a deductible is it causes us to drive more safely because we have some skin in the game. The only purpose of a deductible for an insurance company is to increase their profits, period.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to ensure that we're a little bit more conscious about stepping in front of a car.
I'll think twice about getting hit by a car next time.
Yeah, exactly. We'll show them.
Yeah.
And then when you take a look at America, where we are economically, it's been in the news that if someone encounters a $500 bill in America, something like the majority of Americans would have to go to a friend or a relative or dip into some form of credit in order to pay a $500 unexpected medical bill.
Right. And that's predatory credit. That's credit that the highest possible. Even if you're using your credit cards, that's high cost. And then if you have to go to one of those payroll loan kind of places, you're ending up paying. It's predatory.
It's the proper word to use is predatory. It has only one function, and that's to make more money off its money. Mm-hmm. When you consider that we're attempting to change the healthcare system, and in which can only be done politically in the sense that there are laws that can be put into place that would alter the financial structure of who gets paid, who gets what share of what. Everybody's got skin in the game, and they want to keep it that way. They want nobody wants change. Follow the money. Do you think that pharma wants change? Do you think that hospitals want change? Do you think that insurance companies want change? No. There's no money in that, unless, of course, it changes to their benefit. So the consciousness raising, which is really what is happening with the book we wrote in Medical Debt, as well as our charity, abolishing $1 billion worth of medical debt has to catch the attention of politicians. It has to catch the attention of policymakers. And that's what we intend to do. As a 501c3, we really can't go out lobbying, saying, I want this health plan over that one. But it certainly wakes people up to the fact that the present system has got to be changed. And if not, they are one accident or one illness away from financial disaster.
Yeah, and what's unfortunate is that in a certain regard, I read somewhere recently that if you're running for Senate, let's say you're a senator who's just been elected and you want to get elected in 6 years, you have to raise roughly $6,000 a day for 6 years in order to raise the money to run for re-election. So consequently, when money is the leverage, it's very difficult for public interest to make a showing. So this is really going to have to be a great, as we would call it, upwising, as people waking up and wising up and acting in accord. And unfortunately, in a certain regard, outside the two-party system, even though the Democrats have been talking about universal health care, in order to run for office, they're beholden to those very interests who they're going to have to run afoul of if they are to change anything, as you had suggested. Yeah. So I'm curious, how do we what ideas do you have for creating the leverage to impact this issue outside of the impact the issue outside the system so that it's happening inside the system?
Well, this is such an individual part, an individual responsibility. People point fingers at other people that should be doing more, and in the meantime, they're doing less. My feeling about the work that we're doing is to wake up people. I'll give you the four things that we've determined have made our charity so successful.
Good.
Number one is awareness. If people don't know about you, they can't do anything about you. So when John Oliver had that show, and we had 8 seconds of exposure in his show, and end up, I think, bringing in $200,000 or $300,000 in the next 60 days because of that. That type of awareness allowed us to go out and buy more debt to cause more people to become aware of us. Now, to give you an idea of the importance of the work that we're doing for cities and states and for different groups of people. For example, when the Minnesota nurses heard about what we were doing, they called us up and they said, you know, we've been involved in a strike against a local hospital, and we finally won the strike, but it wasn't without the help of all the citizens of Minnesota. Literally, there were cases where a nurse would be standing in a grocery line and someone would come up and pay her bill. So she said to us, we'd like to thank the citizens of Minnesota. How much medical debt is available to buy in Minnesota? And there was about $2.1 million. And we checked it out. And it was going to go for about, I think, $19,000. So we told them that, and they said sold. So they sent us a check for $19,000. We purchased that debt. And then letters started going out telling these families, there were over 2,000 families, that guess what? Your debt has been abolished because of the generosity of the Minnesota Nurses Association. And that's
wow.
When they started.
That's really
they
cool.
Is that cool?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually.
I mean, who doesn't love a nurse anyway?
Yeah.
So when this happened, they got the local TV station to come to the headquarters. They got the Attorney General from Minnesota to come and cut a big check in half. And it was a true celebration. But what happened is that the nurses got the recognition that they deserved simply by doing good. Now, this has caught the attention of a lot of different organizations. For example, out in California, a couple of major corporations, I think it's WeTransfer and is it Headspace, Mindspace, mm-hmm. Not quite sure the name, but they wanted to be able to make a difference in California. So they said, how much debt is available in Los Angeles County? And there was about $30 million, which, by the way, translates in our world to be about $30,000. So they said, no problem. So we bought the debt for them, and two major corporations that people know that they cared as a corporate responsibility to get rid of individuals' medical debt.
Wow. Well, that really involves a lot of people, and it just creates a sense of moving things in the right direction. Excellent conversation. We're going to be back after this break with Jerry Ashton and talking about End Medical Debt. This is Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
The student asks the teacher, how do I experience transformation? The teacher replies, when the student is ready to receive deeper answers, the student then asks, how do I know what deeper questions to ask? And the teacher replies, when the student decides to commit to a practice inviting transformation, level 2 questions will be revealed. Hi, I'm Tomas Garza, and as a teacher and host, I'm inviting listeners to enroll in the Mastery of Transformation by joining me on Decide to Transform, your bridge to Level 2 Answers, Tuesdays, 1 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org, brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Well, hi, Steve Bierman. We're back with our guest, Jerry Ashton. We're talking about ending medical debt. We're talking about a huge problem in this country and how it is being addressed, particularly in terms of raising consciousness and then giving people the opportunity to help make a difference. So why don't you continue with the you said there are four ways that that your work was really moving the dial.
That's right. The very first way is awareness. These corporations wouldn't have known about us if it hadn't been for TV stations who've taken upon themselves to abolish debt in their broadcast area. If it hadn't been for John Oliver, they wouldn't have heard about it. So it's the type of thing where it's a domino effect that's going larger rather than smaller. I'll give you an idea. Awareness is the first thing. However, there's another element which we have no control over, which rules what happens going forward, and that is it has to touch people. It has to engage them. They have to resonate with, they have to have compassion. So when we talk about taking medical debt off of people's backs, hundreds of thousands of people will hear the story, and a few thousands of them will be so touched by it that the next thing that they want to do is to get educated. Mm-hmm. Who are these people? What are they doing? Are they legitimate? Is this too good to be true? What is this thing called medical debt? How does it come about? So that's why in RIP Medical Debt, we have a heavy emphasis on education so people can learn what the problem is and learn what the possibilities can be. And then lastly, of course, is action. Once you know it, once you're touched by it, once you're educated to do something, then it's putting that education to work. Now, most recently, the ones that have surprised and pleased us the most, and one would wonder why we would even be surprised, is the faith-based community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there seems to be some kind of a correlation between forgiveness and Jesus. Somehow or another, there's a relationship in there that's kind of tightly bound, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I think that's a great concept, particularly these days when Jesus might not recognize the church or many churches.
So he might not, and the church might not even recognize him. So but those who really have the understanding and the teachings that you would like to imagine to be true to the faith resonate to the fact that there is such a thing as the least among us. There is such a fact as being your brother's keeper. There is such a fact of being a good Samaritan, and that these actions in themselves are reward enough. So when we were contacted about 2 years ago by, I believe it was Covenant Church just outside of Dallas, Texas, they had heard about us, and they called us up and they said, how much would $50,000 buy in medical debt in our area? And I said, well, roughly about $5 million. And they said, okay, we'll give you a call back. Within 15 minutes, the guy calls me back and says, we're making that $100,000. We want to get rid of $10 million worth of medical debt in North Texas. Do you have it available? And so we went into our research mode. We located the debt. We completed the transaction. And then on Easter Sunday, the pastor was able to announce that they had abolished the debt of thousands and thousands of families in their area. Now that is action.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Jubilee. You know, I mean, there's that concept. It dates back to ancient Judaism, the Jubilee idea. Every 50 years, debts are retired or forgiven. And I think that what you're doing really has the potential to tap into that kind of level of caring in a very tangible way for people.
Very true. Most religions have within their teachings the idea of taking care of the poor and the sick. That resonates across almost all religions. The Jubilee is unique to the Hebrew religion, the Jewish religion, And it really is translated as 50 years forgiveness to release slaves, 7 years to relieve debt.
Yeah.
Now, that's where our bankruptcy laws originated. Every 7 years, you can go bankrupt. That goes all the way back to the Jubilee.
Interesting. I didn't realize there was that connection. So we have that. We have that. You know, and of course, the elephant and the donkey, because both political parties are involved in this, the elephant and donkey in the living room is the healthcare system itself that is so profit-oriented that it generates these very, very taxing and vexing problems. So I'm curious, because in your book, you say that the three authors of this book are coming from different political perspectives, and I'm curious to see how each of these perspectives, or how they all together, would address the big picture of healthcare in America.
Well, you've hit a good point. We are so divided in America, as you well know. We all know that. And people are stuck on their positions of rightness. And the very fact that I'm right means somebody else has to be wrong, and never the twain shall meet. Well, we at RIP Medical Debt realize that we're sweeping up after the parade. We're sweeping up after the jackass. We're sweeping up after the elephant. And we're tired of it. Yeah. We're tired of sweeping up after them, but we're doing that because it's needed. Now, someday we're going to get at the front of the parade. Right now, we're a little bit like a MASH unit back in the days of Korea, where your job as a MASH unit was to land on a battlefield, not to argue with the generals, but to fix the wounded, to bring people back to life. So in our work, we know that we're taking care of a symptom. We're not taking care of the disease, but we're bringing people's awareness to it. And when you bring awareness to something and enough people are touched, enough of the listeners that you have right now are touched, say, I need to do something about that. Now we go back to the idea of how do you get involved? How do you make that happen? Well, I can guarantee you, I visited two different churches this past week in the Bay Area up in San Francisco. One was the Three Crosses, and the other was Menlo Church. Menlo Church donated $100,000 for $10 million for the medical debt. The Three Crosses, I believe, is in the middle of completing a transaction with us as well. When I sat in and listened to the sermons, they were putting words out there for people to hear. But more importantly, they gave them an action by way of their church's participation or charity to literally make a difference. The very fact that they could take a tithing of a dollar and turn it to $100 for the medical debt forgiven was pretty compelling. But what also woke up for them is the question, why does this charity exist to begin with? And I want your listeners to know, I want to be put out of business.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you say that well. You know, and first of all, giving people, wow, my dollar can have that kind of leverage, that's important. And then the second part, in the wake of all of that, you know, as you're talking about, you know, sweeping up after the parade, in the wake of all of that, people are going and maybe for the first time questioning what has been considered, quote unquote, normal.
Yes. It is not normal. It's abnormal in a civilized society. It's an abnormality when you consider all the nations that do not put their citizens through this. You have to ask yourself, what in the world has caused this to happen? And all you have to do is follow the money. And that if the money leads to your politician, notice that. If the money leads to some form of rapacious attempts to collect on debt, that's beyond all credibility. You need to pay attention to that. You've got to make wrongs right. That's what we came into existence to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting because we have a system where we have an entire part of the system that is creating problems. And then we have the well-meaning segment of the population kind of doing the best they can to fix the problem rather than create prevention. And I think maybe there's an emerging idea that there has to be a way that a critical mass of the uncritical masses until now can actually impact and create systemic change. And so I appreciate that you're looking at that as well. So let's say somebody is listening to this and they have an idea about their church or perhaps the company that they work for. How do people begin to initiate the process of having their organization sponsor some of this debt?
Well, thank you for asking. Number one, there's our website, which is ripmedicaldebt.org. You can go there and get all the information you need about how to start a campaign, read some of the stories about us. As you know, PBS NewsHour last week did a lovely piece that pretty much makes it very clear to the viewer who we are, how we arrived at where we are, and the importance of our work. And it's done in a journalistic style that I know the viewers are going to love. In your case, they get the joys of listening to this and imagining what it might be. Well, one thing you can imagine is, as far as the book goes, if you go to endmedicaldebt.com, you can buy a book at Amazon, $15.95, and because the authors have given up their royalties, which means for every book sale there's $5 of royalties, well, guess what? That's donated to RIP Medical Debt, and that will forgive $500 worth of medical debt. So not only will you buy a book and educate yourself about the problem, but you'll also make a difference of $500 in somebody's medical debt problem.
Wow. Well, that's really very tangible. I like that this is as tangible. And the remaining time that we have, I'm just still curious as to people coming from different points of view and having your book has a more of a whole picture view of the whole system, you know, without creating a lot of villains. How do you reconcile these political differences?
Well, first of all, it's not about reconciliation. It's about coming into agreement. And the agreement that the three authors came to is that we're going to take the hill. And just like in the military, you don't care if the guy to the right or left of you is Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, heathen. You don't care what color they are, as long as they're covering your back, because you've got the job is to take the hill. All three authors have put our own differences aside, knowing that what we need to do is to make that difference. Political parties today could learn a lot just from what we did to put this together. So each of the authors has a different voice, as I sometimes joke about it. One is a little bit to the left, one's a little bit to the right, and there's the other one who still has a compass.
I won't ask which one you are, but it doesn't matter. Because it doesn't matter.
We'll have to figure that out. Right.
Yeah, but I think that this is really important. You know, there was a study that was done by USA Today a couple of weeks ago, a survey, and most people in this country are tired of the screaming polemics at each side of the polarity, and they would prefer to actually work together to solve problems rather than engage in shouting at one another, which seems to be how the current political parties are able to make money. I mean, they're able to get donations by basically villainizing the other side. And so actually having a project where, despite where you're coming from politically, you're all going to the same place, is very heartening in these times. I think it speaks to a lot of the unspoken political understanding of the American people. It's just that there isn't that much out there that brings people together, your project is one of those things.
Well, thank you. When you take a look at it, you have to ask this question. Would I want to put myself and my family in the position of being bankrupt, homeless, helpless, harassed by bill collectors? Or would I rather hold on to my idiotology? Would I rather hold on to my position?
That's exactly correct. Because what happens is, you know, we've been in the age of social media, it's very easy to hit send or make a post that is directly insulting to somebody who you wouldn't insult face to face. And so
That's true. It's created
the kind of politics where people get some emotional juice out of expressing negativity towards somebody else. And we're all drowning, not just drowning in debt, but we're drowning in that negativity. And I think that you're holding out a very, very valuable life raft to people who want to do something to make a positive difference and in the process educate all of us about something that we've all suspected and now we know it's true. So I so appreciate the work that you're doing. Anything else you want to add? We got about a minute left.
Well, I would say that when our nation has come to the point where one-third of all GoFundMe campaigns are centered around medical debt, and GoFundMe is the insurance company of last resort, you've got to wake up and stop doing it the way we're doing it. So wake up, whoever you are, grow where you're planted, talk to your local representatives, talk to your churches, talk to the people that will make a difference. You can.
Thank you so much, Jerry Ashton, for the work that you're doing. This is Steve Behrman. We're on WikiPolitiki. We're back again next week. Again, thank you, Jerry, and RIP medical debt.